Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you. Our next guest is a very talented comedian, author, storyteller. He's written for people like Jay Leno, Robin Williams, Joan Rivers, George Carlin. He's got a brand new television show coming up in February entitled Driving Hollywood. Dylan Brody joins us on the G&M Family Market phone line. Dylan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Rich. Forgive me for doing this right off the bat. I have to correct a piece of my intro. I never wrote for George Carlin.
You did not?
We had a delightful phone call. We had two delightful phone calls about 8 minutes apart. And he liked my work. I was a huge fan of his work. But I never actually wrote for George Carlin. All the rest was correct. It's just that in this time of fake news and dropped dossiers and huge demonstration files full of blank paper, I would like to keep the record straight, and I refuse to accept that we can just live in a post-truth world.
Well, fortunately, you're holding the line. You may be the only one, but we certainly appreciate that. Let's talk first about the television show that will be coming up on February 14th on Next Up Comedy. Tell us a little bit about Dylan Brody's Driving Hollywood, if you can.
I am so unbelievably proud of this piece. It was all shot in one take. Well, you know, there were several cameras rolling, so it's not just it's not a videographed wedding video of me performing. It's, you know, it's a properly produced show. But it was in one performance at the Mark Taper Foundation's beautiful David Henry Hwang Theater. The show is really one long story about a trip into Hollywood for a very disappointing meeting, because that's what Hollywood provides one in life, is a series of very disappointing meetings. And it deals with the idea that art and commerce are inherently in conflict, that entertainment is the word people use when they don't want to take responsibility for what they what they say through their art. So it covers my entire career as an artist in the world of the entertainment industry. And I think it will resonate powerfully with everybody who is a little bit disappointed with where they are in life, with everybody who is a little bit disappointed with the entertainment industry and or the state of the arts, and it will resonate powerfully with anybody who, and I do not think I overstate this, who breathes.
Well, let's talk about that intersection of art and commerce and the fact that the comedy has undergone so many changes through the years, and there have been some very strong periods. Carlin, certainly a key part of that, I always myself preferred storytellers over people who just threw jokes at me. But is it in recent years just the need for product that has us seemingly going back to the time when it's just pack those jokes in as quickly as you can?
That's not just about the need for product. I mean, you know, you can fill an hour with storytelling as easily as you can fill it, more easily actually than you can fill an hour with jokes. That comes from the late 80s, early 90s comedy boom, when there were so many showcase programs on television going on, and everybody needed to prove that they could meet the requisite 4-to-1 laugh per minute ratio of television. And that's an actual thing. They time it with a stopwatch, because I think we all know the very best art comes with a ridiculous rubric. So at that time, in order to get headlining work, you needed to prove that you could meet the 4-to-1 laugh per minute ratio so that you could get television time, and then you needed to maintain that pace in the comedy clubs lest people become disappointed with what you were doing because it didn't look exactly what they were hoping for based on television. Now, with the proliferation of television channels, with the possibilities of the internet, there's been, I think, a widening of the humor scape so that there's room for stuff like what I do. Outside of public radio, which is, you know, where Garrison Keillor made his way as a storyteller and so on. I think now there's starting to be an understanding and actually a craving in the American populace for something bigger and better. Also, because of the comedy boom of the late 80s, early 90s, where it was all about television and not offending anybody, there was at that time not yet the fragmentation of audience that we've got now, where people can find the stuff that appeals to them. There was largely a push for comedy to be either utterly generic, that is to say, what Seinfeld was doing, and then the many observational comics who imitated him, because he's a brilliant craftsman, but he has very little to say about the world. And then a lot of people sort of followed in his footsteps doing where do your socks go when you lose them in the dryer jokes. And comics who were completely within the framework of the current political mindset of the time, which is why you got really right-wing, ultimately right-wing reactionary comics who seemed to be cutting edge because they cursed. And that's where you got Sam Kinison, who was a genius of a joke writer, but the ideas he was presenting through jokes were absolutely horrifying. Blame the poor for their poverty, blame the starving for their plight, and so on. Andrew Dice Clay, who was doing really deeply reactionary, misogynist material. Tim Allen, who found his way onto television, he was not cursing, but his material was ultimately about a regressive idea of gender typing. And this was able to sort of slide in without challenging anybody. And now, as we've got the fragmentation of audience, there's the freedom to really, for people to find their own voices and to find their own audience. And it's an incredibly exciting time right now in comedy, I think. That I could get this show released through Next Up Comedy, and I had to go to London to do it, but that I could get it released at all to a wide audience is tremendously gratifying and really proof that people are looking for new voices and new ideas and new thought in their comedy. I hope that answers your question.
It certainly does. Now, I wanted to ask you this as someone who began life reasonably pretentious. Is it true, as you say, that pretense matures into pomposity?
100% true. 100% true. We, the smart people in the world, and it, particularly in this anti-intellectual nation of ours, we start out pretending to know more than we do because we want to be like those people who seem to know everything. And then as we educate ourselves and we learn more, we just become arrogant know-it-alls. And I am proud to say I am among the most know-it-all-ish of the arrogant.
We're talking with Dylan Brody here on Downtown, and as someone who lists on his website that he is a purveyor of fine words and phrases, are you concerned that with what's going on in the political world and in entertainment, for that matter, are we entering a phase that devalues language?
Oh, we've been in that phase for 40 years. From the first time somebody wrote flammable because they were afraid inflammable would not be understood by people, we have been devaluing language. I often say that we need to find a way for education to take a new tack on all of this, and the tack is the correct word. It's an idiomatic sailing term that refers to a way of setting the sail so that boats can travel in directions not directly parallel to the prevailing wind, and I explain that because if you've been saying take a different tact, people like me have been judging you harshly.
And me.
Good. I'm very pleased to hear that. I think it's very dangerous. I have figured out the only way to make sense of anything that our president-elect says is as he speaks, you listen to him and imagine that what he is doing is a monologue written by brilliant playwright and conservative douche nozzle David Mamet. If you imagine that it's a Mamet monologue, suddenly you can see through to the subtext of what's going on in his head, and it makes perfect sense and is all the more horrifying.
It is a little Ricky Roma-esque now that you mention it.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? Wow. And at any moment, that man is going to try to sell us swampland in Florida.
Well, Dylan, for anybody who hasn't heard your work, first of all, I don't know what's wrong with those people. But secondly, could you give us a little sample and share one of your great stories? If there were swans, it would be a lamentation.
Oh, I would be delighted to. Thank you so much for asking, sir. One of my favorite things about John Darnielle is that even when he performs alone with none of his musical colleagues, he goes on stage and says, "Hi, we are the Mountain Goats." I am not a music critic, for the record. Is there a record? If there's a record, I am not a music critic. Even if there's not a record, I am not a music critic. My point is, I don't review records. Recently, my CD had spun back around to the song Slow West Vultures when I pushed the button on my steering wheel that turns off the music and answers the phone. even though I have caller ID and could see that it was my mother. After the conversation got on longer than I was comfortable with, which is to say we had exchanged greetings and were still on the phone, she said, "I hope I'm not interrupting anything." I said, "No. I was just listening to the mountain goats." She said, "Oh, I thought you were in your car." I said, I am in my car." She said, "Oh, why are there mountain goats in your car?" I said, it's a recording, Mom." She said, "Oh, I don't get that new age thing where people drive around listening to nature sounds, a recording of a field of crickets or a pod of whales or whatever." I said, "Mom, it's a band." She said, "Honey, I'm pretty sure if it's whales, it's a pod." She said it in that tone of forced patience and condescension with which she corrected me on my grammar when I was 5. I said, "No, Mom, not the whales, the mountain goats." She said, "Oh, that would be a pack, dear." I said, "Mom," I paused to grip my steering wheel and listen to my breath. I imagined a flying bird carrying my anger toward a distant horizon, as my therapist has advised me to do when I speak to my mother. And I said, the mountain goats are a band. They play instruments and sing post-grunge humanist folk rock." She said, "Oh, that sounds very interesting. I would like to hear that." I said, "I will send you a CD." She said, "Please don't. I wouldn't enjoy it." I was just being polite. And then after the briefest pause, she said, "Can they even know what it's about?" I said, "Who?" She said, "These mountain goats, can they even know what the words mean?" I said, "Mom, do you genuinely believe the conversation we're having right now is actually about mountain goats that have been trained to play musical instruments and sing post-grunge humanist folk rock?" She said, "Oh, Dylan, you're just like your father. It's always all about the subject." I gripped my steering wheel and I listened to my breath. She could hear the tension over the phone because ultimately I am just like my father and it is always about the subtext. She said, "Are you okay? Where did you go just then?" I said, "I'm fine, Mom. I was just imagining a whole flock of crows headed toward a distant horizon." She said, "Oh, dear, you're thinking of a murder." And I said, "Yes. Yes, I am."
Oh, that is wonderful.
Thank you, sir. That story is called If There Were Swans, It Would Be a Lamentation, and it's available on, I don't know, possibly the digital download Dylan Goes Electric from Rooftop Comedy. It might be one of my stand-up record CDs, but I think it's from the digital download from Rooftop Comedy. And it shows up in the new piece, Dylan Brody's Driving Hollywood, dropping February 14th from Next Up Comedy. Do you mind if I plug my own stuff from time to time?
I wish you would. Absolutely, yes.
I will occasionally just conversationally drop this. One of the most exciting things about that show right now is that an outfit out of San Francisco, Blue Panther Productions, has picked up the rights to have Nancy Carlin, an actress and director, direct me in it. We're turning it into a fully staged theatrical experience. I'm going to go on the road with it to Chicago and then Barcelona and then New York in the spring. And if any of your listeners happen to be interested in investing in theater, feel free to contact Blue Panther Productions in San Francisco, because they're lining up investors like crazy right now in this thing. And it's very exciting for me to feel like I'm doing legitimate theater.
Well, we look forward to Driving Hollywood. Again, it drops on February 14th, Next Up Comedy. Check out Dylan's website as well. It's just a real delight for us to talk with you this afternoon. We wish you luck on the project, and I hope we get a chance to talk again sometime.
Oh, it's a pleasure and a privilege. I hope I haven't done anything that was out of line or offended you, which I seem to do whenever I talk to my family.
I can say this. A parliament of owls have gathered outside the studio.
Well, if you would, just ask them the obvious question, would you?
Which is?
Who?
Thank you very much. I laid that in for you. You hit it out of the park.
Oh, you're a good man.
Thank you, Dylan. We appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. Take care.